The Fourth District Appellate Court of the State of Illinois has now convened. The Honorable Thomas M. Harris presiding.
Hello, counsel. The first case this afternoon is case number 4-25-0024, Ashley Madigan and Jordan Keene versus Austin Hannabarger. Let's proceed with appearances first for the appellant.
Lanny Darr for the appellants.
Thank you. And for the appellees,
James Craney for Appellee.
thank you,
William
Mr.
Nickel. William Nickel for Appellee.
All right, Mr. Nichol, it's my understanding you will not be participating today. Is that right?
That's right.
Okay, Mr. Darr, you may proceed with your argument.
Thank you. May it please the court, counsel. Good afternoon. I'm here seeking reversal of the trial court's order dismissing two plaintiffs' lawsuit that was filed in Whiteside County against a Whiteside County citizen and resident. One of the plaintiffs in the lawsuit, Jordan Keene, also lives in Whiteside County and lives with Austin Hannabarger. Nevertheless, considering those facts, the trial court concluded it would be more convenient for the parties to litigate in Montgomery County, Missouri, than it would be in Whiteside County, where they live. And it's our contention here today that this finding was an abuse of the trial court's discretion. By way of background, this injury claim exists due to a motorcycle wreck that occurred in Montgomery County, Missouri. It involved two motorcycles, one driven by Daniel McCauley and another driven by Austin Hannabarger. Keene was a passenger on the Hannabarger motorcycle, and and Madigan was the passenger on the McCauley motorcycle. Both plaintiffs were injured, and they sued McCauley in Missouri in Montgomery County, and then they sued Hannabarger in his home forum of Whiteside County. The case against McCauley was settled immediately, and it had been dismissed before the forum non-convenience motion was considered. So the only defendant in the case was Hannabarger. Nevertheless, Mr. Hannabarger's attorneys brought a motion saying it would be more convenient for this lawsuit to be brought 4 hours or 280 miles away from his residence in Montgomery County, where no party resided, no medical treatment was received, and no witnesses resided.
Where are the medical providers?
The medical providers, the initial medical provider was in Columbia, Missouri, which is in Boone County. And then there was a lot of subsequent medical treatment by both plaintiffs in around St. Louis and St. Louis County. And now Jordan Keene lives up in Whiteside County. So a lot of it, her ongoing treatment would be up in that area. But not surprisingly, there was no affidavits supporting the defendant's motion. There was not even an affidavit from the defendant himself, attesting to his inconvenience, in litigating in 280 miles away from his house, as opposed to 12 miles where the Whiteside County Courthouse is located. There was
Counsel,
no
this
evidence.
case goes to trial, and it's contested at a jury trial, so the party's going to have to present evidence. How many different witnesses would need to be called pertaining to the accident itself and subsequent treatment of the people regarding the accident that occurred in Montgomery County?
Well, that's an unknown fact, Your Honor, because in this case, plaintiff filed a motion to stay hearing on the forum non-convenience motion, saying there needed to be preliminary fact discovery conducted. Defendant opposed that motion and wanted to go forward based upon the police reports showing the existence and the location of various witnesses and various medical providers. But that is nothing more than speculation or conjecture as to what would be necessary to go to trial. And it would be defendant's burden to come forward and show what literal witnesses would be necessary at trial, and also why those witnesses could not be obtained through some other measure, such as depositions of the doctors. Those are frequently done through, depositions in advance, whether it be in Montgomery.
But if the case goes to trial, depositions don't count. You have to bring, if it's an arm's length proceeding, you're going to have to bring all the witnesses to Sterling, Illinois, would you not?
Well, no, we could take evidence depositions of them for trial purposes if we couldn't get them up there. But they very well may come, or they may not be, have relevant testimony. We just don't know because there was no inquiry made. And the case law is replete with those types of situations.
Oh, so it's in, we're talking about Whiteside County, Illinois, but that's just fortuitous that that's where the particular defendant lives. How about Cook County? Would that have been an appropriate venue had he lived there?
No. Oh, if he lived, yes. If Mr. Hannenbarger lived in Cook County, of course we could sue him anywhere that he lived.
Are there any limitations on this notion of you can sue the defendant in the venue wherever he happens to be, no matter where the accident occurred?
Well, in Illinois, the statute, there's two prongs. There's the statutory venue, which would be where he resided, or where there's a transactional approach for the venue statute. In this case, sure, any county he resides in, he can be sued in that county and meet the statutory venue requirements. After that choice or that selection is made, then if the defendant wants to change venue from the statutory venue permitted, he would have to argue inconvenience. And that inconvenience analysis is what we're here talking about today, which is it's their burden to prove that this was an overwhelmingly inconvenient venue selected by the plaintiff. And to meet that standard, the trial court would have had to have made specific findings. Specifically, they would have had to make the first finding is, what level of deference should be afforded to this plaintiff's selection of Whiteside County? Well,
Mr. Darr, what case stands for that proposition?
That the first step they must have to do is determine the level.
Identify the weight that they are giving, or the deference to be given to the plaintiff's choice of forum. And I'm taking your, I'm using the words that you used.
Sure. The first step of it's cited on page 6 of our brief. Benedict versus Abbott Laboratories and Vivas versus Boeing Company.
And those cases say that the trial court judge has to identify the deference it is giving to the plaintiff's choice of forum?
Sure. I think that those cases and others say, and for good reason, that the deference, sometimes they're giving slight deference, sometimes they're giving no deference, and sometimes they're given great deference.
So it's insufficient if the trial court just simply says, I've taken into consideration the plaintiff's choice of forum?
Yes, but in that case, that did not even occur. What the court said was, in their order, said that they were properly advised, and they just said the defendant's motion to dismiss is granted. In the oral record, the basic basis for the denial was that they thought it was inconvenient to the plaintiffs, which is a inappropriate consideration. The plaintiff gets to select, if there's multiple venues, they get to select which of those multiple statutory venues they want to file in. But in this case, I kind of lost my train of thought there, but the choice of venue. So once that choice of venue is the level of deference is decided, that's the high water mark that the defendant must meet by showing inconvenience. So if it's a high level of deference because it was the defendant's residence and where one of the plaintiffs resides, that should come down as a high level of deference.
Well, counsel, I don't. Let me just see if that's what you mean to say. My understanding of the law is that the plaintiff's choice of forum receives less deference when the forum is neither the plaintiff's residence nor the site of the accident or injury. It doesn't mention whether it's the defendant's residence. Isn't that correct?
Well, Your Honor, I have a different understanding of the law in the sense of I thought the location of the defendant residence was important, but I agree with you that the location of the accident is one factor to be considered when you're determining deference, but it's not the only factor.
No, and I don't want to suggest these are not part of the equation, but in starting out with the question of deference to the plaintiff's choice of forum, that choice deserves less deference when the forum is neither the plaintiff's residence nor the site of the accident. Separately, on the question of inconvenience to the parties, I agree with you that if the defendant resides in the jurisdiction that was chosen, that element, a different element, may be weighed against transfer. Isn't that right?
I agree that the residence of the defendant weighs in favor of keeping it in Whiteside County, and it typically does, especially when you're dealing with an individual defendant as opposed to a corporate defendant. And some of the cases dealing with corporate defendants have a little different analysis. But when you're talking about just an individual, I think the fact that he is sued in his home residence, and the Supreme Court has said when you're sued in your home residence, you can't complain of inconvenience. And that's,
but only on that factor, only on the factor of whether the party's inconvenience weighs in favor or against the motion. It's not like an overriding factor that controls or prevents the defendant from proceeding on the motion and having all the other factors considered, correct?
Yes, I assume there could be circumstances in which the defendant was sued in his home residence and there would be other factors present that would justify a transfer. I concede that could be a factual scenario, but that is not the facts that exist here, because there's nothing that ties the witnesses or the parties to Montgomery County, Missouri, because of the fact that this was a purely transitory occurrence. They were driving through Montgomery County it was a collection of motorcycles and people out on a recreational run, and the wreck happened to occur there. But the people that were involved in that collection of motorcycles do not reside in Montgomery County. The plaintiffs were airlifted out of that county to their hospitals. So, and in Missouri, we only have one venue opportunity, and that is the location of the accident. End of story. So the two factors we're dealing with here are, do we go all the way back to Montgomery County where there's no connection other than the scene of the accident? Or do we proceed in Whiteside County, where the defendant resides, and one plaintiff resides. And when you consider those factors, it becomes difficult to understand how the defendant can complain of his own inconvenience. And if he truly wanted to complain of his own inconvenience, he would have added that to the record. He would have filed an affidavit or some basis to allow us to understand the basis of that argument that it's actually going to be more convenient for me to litigate 4 hours away from my house as opposed to 12 miles away from my house. But that wasn't put into the record. And there was no basis in the record for that. And under these cases, in that Jupiter case that I cited late and then the court allowed, which is a recent Fifth District case, obviously not a Fourth District case, but says that it's an abuse of discretion not to individually address each public and private interest factor. And in this case, there were no private or public interest factors addressed by the trial court, certainly not in the order. So that brings us to what I think is an important consideration in this case. This case is before the court on an abuse of discretion standard. If this was a de novo standard of review, you could cast aside the trial court's order and do your own analysis of the forum events or the forum criteria. But since it's up there on an abuse of discretion standard, you have to know, you have to be informed as to what was the discretion, what was the analysis that the trial court engaged in to reach its conclusion. And then only once you know how she reached her conclusion, can you make the determination as to whether it's an abuse of that trial court discretion. And that's where I think the Jupiter case comes in, because the Jupiter case, my reading of it, makes it very clear that it's, and this is my understanding of even before the Jupiter case, but that the trial court has to address each of the public interest and private interest factors and make a determination as to whether they apply, don't apply, which ones they favor, which ones they don't favor. And then it's upon reviewing that order that the court, the reviewing court, can make a determination as to whether or not the discretion was abused. But in
Mr.
the
Dar, I think you might be reading a little too much into what was said. The Supreme Court indicated that it would be preferential for a trial court to provide that record for a reviewing court. But I don't think I've seen a case that says that is a requirement, that the trial court is to identify its evaluation of each and every private and public interest factor and note that in the record, unless you can point to a case that says otherwise.
Well, it was just the case I was just mentioning, the Jupiter versus Mead Johnson and Company, 225 Illap 5th, 230248, which was the subject of our motion to cite supplemental authority, because it came out after we filed our reply brief or our rebuttal brief. And that is the case I rely on that says, in pretty clear terms, I think, that the trial court needs to consider each, needs to make in its order each individualized analysis of each order. And in the absence of that, it is an abuse of discretion.
Do you have that in front of you?
I do.
Okay. Well,
I think I do.
If you're stating that that is in fact what the case stands for, I would really like for you to point out to us the paragraph in which that appears.
Well, I thought I had it in front of me. I cited in my brief or my motion to page or paragraphs 37 through 39 of that opinion, and I'm pulling it up right now.
Well, Mr. Darren, I don't want to have you use up all of your time on this. If during counsel's appellee's argument, you can find that portion and in your rebuttal identify it for us, that'd be helpful.
Okay. I can do that. I mean, I think it's mostly in paragraph 39, but I'll address it when I come back on rebuttal.
Thank you.
I think is my time up, I guess.
You have, yes, excuse me. Your time is up and you will have time in rebuttal. Mr. Craney, you may proceed with your argument.
Yeah, may it please the court. we're doing this electronically, and your honors can't hear me, I do not mind if you interject and tell me you can't hear me. I think I will be brief. I have prepared an outline, and I can go through and I can list each factor of the public and private interest factors, and I can explain why the trial court was correct in its evaluation, and I will do so. However, assuming that this court has read everything, as I sort of expect is the case, and doesn't need me to recite that. Let me start with first a few primary issues.
Well, Mr. Craney, then let me ask if it's simply to go through the private and public interest factors here. You can get to that, but I do want to ask some specific questions. First, was it necessary for the trial judge in this case to go beyond what she said, which was that she had considered the private and public interest factors, and then to make her decision without having specified how she evaluated each?
No, it was not. And there's Illinois Supreme Court directly on that, which we cited in our response to counsel's argument. The Supreme Court has indicated in that case, which may be universal. I cited it in the response to his motion to supplement authority. And while I pull that case, I will tell you that what the Supreme Court says is that while it's Landmark versus NIP Group, still good law, and the Supreme Court says that while it's preferable for a trial court to make a more detailed analysis in its order so that the reviewing court has something to look at, it's not necessary. And as a matter of fact, in that case, the Supreme Court says that under facts almost identical to what the trial court did here, that it was sufficient to say that I've taken into account the pleadings before me, which analyze all the factors, and to say in the record that after an analysis, I've considered all the factors and I've made my decision. So the Supreme Court has given its imprimatur to that approach. It may not be preferable, but we disagree with counsel. I'm slow sometimes, and I like to read these cases slowly. And I've read the case that he cited a few times, and I don't think it says anything like there has to be. I don't think there's case law that even says that it has to be a written order on forum, much less that it has to go into a detailed analysis of each factor. So we disagree on that. And I think the Supreme Court jurisprudence supports that what happened in this case is directly on point.
Mr. Darr indicated in his argument that there is no affidavit by defendant that Whiteside County was an inconvenient forum. Was it argued before the trial court that it was inconvenient to the defendant?
Well, it was certainly argued and or submitted that it was inconvenient. I did hear Mr. Dar's argument on that, and I'm not I have not seen any case law, although I'd be educated if someone could tell me about it, that requires there be an affidavit in support. What I do know is that the Fennell case, which we've cited, which plaintiff also cited and relied upon, says specifically, and I pulled it while we were talking, that Requiring extensive investigation prior to deciding a forum nonconvenient motion would defeat the purpose of the motion. And I think that the important point here is that plaintiff appellant argues that, you know, were we allowed to do more discovery on this, you know, the court might have had more facts to rely upon. But the jurisprudence in Illinois says exactly the opposite, that they like these things resolved quickly. So, you know, supporting with affidavits or staying a hearing on the forum motion in order to conduct some discovery and create more of a fact record on the to help the court balance the factors is just not what the law requires. So to answer your question again, yes, it was argued. I could, if you give me a little leeway here, I'll speak to what I think the answer would be on this issue.
Well, confine it to the record, please.
Okay. Well, then let me stop there. Let me stop there. I would like to move on and make another point that, well, I've actually made that point. The framework here, two points that it sounds to me as though the court grasped probably better than me. There's an initial question before we enter into the factors balancing, and that is, to what level does the court give deference to the plaintiff's choice of venue? And the answer to that, as it seems to me the court is well aware, is that in a case like this, there's less deference. But that's not a conclusive analysis. That's just a question. And in this case, it's answered, there's less deference. Then you move into the balancing of the factors. One of those factors, obviously, is convenience of the parties. And included in that analysis is the issue of whether or not the defendant is currently a resident of the chosen forum. We disagree with plaintiff's read of the case law. It seems as though the plaintiff appellant believes that if the defendant resides in the chosen foreign county, that he may not then argue, raise forum as an issue. And that's just not what I think the case law says. Looking at, I believe this is the primary case that everybody relies on. I'll read the case law here. While Motorola is correct in asserting that a party's principal place of business may not be dispositive in the forum nonconvenience analysis, it certainly is an acceptable factor to be weighed in determining whether Illinois is an inconvenient forum. So what that tells us, and that cites to Gridley versus State Farm, and I think that's the Fennell case, though I could be wrong. What that tells us is that, and I freely concede, that we have a little bit of a tougher lift when the defendant resides in the chosen forum. However, it's not only not dispositive of the issue, it's one consideration in determination of one factor in the overall analysis. So I wanted to make that point. It sounds to me as though the court's aware of that. Overall, when you balance the factors—
Craney, now, before you get started on a new point, may I just ask you, when we're dealing with interstate forum nonconvenience, we're not comparing a county in Illinois versus a county in Missouri. We're comparing the convenience of Illinois as a forum versus Missouri as a forum. Is that correct?
Yes, I agree that that's correct. I will concede on the front end that I'm not so sure that the cases have made that as clear as I would like. But I do believe that's the case when you're dealing with an interstate forum issue, which is, and it also is supported by common sense, but I know that's not what we're here to argue about, which is why I think that the issue of whether or not treating physicians, for example, might be in different Missouri counties, I don't think is particularly applicable when we're talking about an interstate forum motion as opposed to an intrastate forum motion. We're really talking about what's the burden that this is putting on the Illinois court system versus, you know, where it should have been brought. I think in that regard, I'd like to point out, by the way, just to make sure the record is clean on this, that at the time the suit was filed, one of the plaintiffs did not live in Illinois. At the time the suit was filed, I think I found out that plaintiff had moved to Illinois the day before the hearing or the morning of or something like that. So, yeah, that's my answer to that. That's my understanding of the law, that when you're looking at interstate forum nonconvenience, you're looking generally at the the forums that you're considering writ large in that scenario are the states.
Now, I know when we're looking at a question of jurisdiction, there's case law that establishes that's measured as of the time the complaint is filed. Are you familiar with any similar law with respect to whether we look only at the status of the situation when the complaint is filed, or can the trial court have considered the fact that the plaintiff changed residency to Illinois after the filing?
I have an answer to that, and my answer is I didn't. I looked and I didn't find cases that answered that specifically in the context of forum. So what I was prepared to say about that, and what I will say, the court is one step ahead of me, is that I was going to fall back on the general law relating to jurisdiction. But I have to concede I don't have a case for the court that says that in the context of forum. That's not to say there isn't one. I didn't find it. I guess finally, I can recite the factors, but those are in my filings, and maybe the court doesn't need me to. I'll point out that the purpose of having a less deferential standard, and I'm quoting the cases on this, the purpose of having a less deferential standard for the plaintiff's choice of forum in a case such as this, and there are cases that say you have to assume some sort of forum shopping when the plaintiff chooses a forum that's not where the accident occurred or where the plaintiff lives at the time. And the one, I guess, if there's one factor I want to focus on, and maybe I'll just, this will be the only factor I talk about unless I'm asked separately, is, and I think it's relevant to consider that factor, by filing in Illinois, we were deprived of the opportunity to take advantage of certain comparative fault issues, to enter into a good faith finding and challenge amounts of settlements reached in the by the other plaintiff.
Based on the case law, where does that factor in?
I think that I concede fully that that does not factor in at this point in an overall analysis of the forum argument. However, I do think that it's a factor. Hang on, I'm looking, bear with me one second. I'm looking for where I included that in my analysis. I think this, okay, I apologize to the court. It took me a second to gather my thoughts. This is relevant when one weighs, I misspoke when I said it went to a factor. It's relevant to determine whether or not the plaintiff's choice of forum is reasonable on the deference analysis. The case law says that when a plaintiff chooses a forum foreign to the plaintiff, the assumption is that the forum is less reasonable. And then the Doughty case, which is the one that both sides have cited, says that by choosing a forum foreign to the plaintiff, it's reasonable to assume that the plaintiff engaged in forum shopping. So in that regard, when the court is analyzing I'll call it the threshold question rather than the balancing the factors, in analyzing the threshold question of deference upon which the plaintiff relies heavily, I mean, the plaintiff goes so far as to suggest that it's almost the end of the question, which I disagree with. But when you analyze this issue of could there be some forum shopping involved, and how much deference should we give to the plaintiff, I think it's important to realize that there are mechanical, legal, strategic reasons why it would make sense in a forum shopping analysis for the plaintiff to have filed in Illinois. It's not a factor to consider here. I fully concede that it's not dispositive on the issue of forum, and I would not suggest to the court that it is. But I thought through this in great detail when we filed the responsive brief, and I do think it's relevant to consider when weighing the plaintiff's selection of forum and kind of looking behind whether or not you can give deference to the plaintiff in choosing that as a reasonable forum. So.
Well, and it may be an academic argument here, but if you have two venues, if this is an interstate forum non-convenience hypothetical here, state A and state B, and there are a mix of factors that favor either state. State A has no caps on damages, state B does. Plaintiff, unsurprisingly, chooses to file his complaint in state B. Are you saying that during the trial court's analysis of the forum non-convenience motion, it should consider that almost as a factor against plaintiff because that would be an indication of forum shopping simply because it has more favorable rules?
I'm saying that if no, well, maybe yes. I'd have to read the question back. But what I'm saying is that if I was a trial court judge, I probably would have concluded in this case that I'm giving less deference to the plaintiff's choice of venues. And one of the reasons for that is that it's conceivable that there was forum shopping for a reason. I wouldn't hold that against the plaintiff. Everybody expects their lawyer to make strategically correct choices for them. It just goes to an analysis of whether or not you give deference, but it doesn't go to any of the factors in making the final determination. I don't know if that's a an adequate answer for Your Honor, but that's my answer.
Okay, thank you.
Isn't there an implicit strategic struggle in any forum non-convenience motion? The plaintiff has chosen one forum because of reasons that the plaintiff feels might be advantageous to his or her case. The defendant seeks to transfer it for reasons flowing in the other direction. Somebody's ox is gored no matter which way the ruling comes down. Isn't the right thing for courts to do is to look past the strategic reasons and not pick who had better strategic reasons and simply focus on the factors as they're articulated?
Yes, that's exactly what the court should do. I fully agree with that. I believe that in this case and in every forum case that would come up, you could articulate a reason why either side has strategic reasons for doing what they're doing. And I have full faith in Mr. Darr to explain why he thinks in his last 5 minutes that we're doing this for strategic reasons, and that's fine. But the point is that that is neither, those considerations are not dispositive of the issue. I agree with that. But I think it is, you know, it goes into, for the same reason that the case law that looks at, there's sort of two countervailing issues that fall to some extent within, to some extent without the factors. And that is the plaintiff's choice of forum is given deference sometimes, less deference other times. And the defendant's resident in the chosen forum is also taken into account. So those two things in a case like this, I think, offset. And I think that, that's as far as I'll go. I believe I've answered that question there. The court is correct. It's not dispositive. The court should look past those things. So just a final, otherwise we've submitted our brief, which talks about why we think that all the factors were met in this case. I think what the trial court did is fully sufficient under the law. I disagreed with the reading of the cases cited by the plaintiff. We didn't have a duty to conduct more full discovery. And, you know, it's not as though in a forum analysis like this, the courts, the jurisprudence requires us to have affidavits from every potential responding police officer, every potential nurse, EMS agent who showed up, and every potential doctor that says it would be less convenient for them to come to Illinois. The case law is set up such that we can make these determinations early on. Taking that all into consideration in a case like this, we've got the issue of a site visit, which is many miles away. You've got the issue of Missouri treating physicians. You've got the issue of a responding police officer, all of whom would typically be witnesses in a case like this. And it leads to the conclusion that, you know, we all understand that the standard here today is an abuse of discretion. And I do not believe that the plaintiff has offered anything to support an abuse of discretion finding by the appellate court. So I'll stop there. Thank you.
Okay. Thank you, Mr. Craney. Mr. Darr, rebuttal?
Yes, just quickly, and I'll probably bounce around here a bit. But we agree there's no obligation to conduct discovery. But in the absence of discovery, as in this case, means that they were left with speculation and conjecture as to the availability of witnesses and evidence and things that were important or unimportant. And the case law is replete with arguments that that is, you cannot base a forum transfer based upon speculation and conjecture. And that's what they were left with when they proceeded just based upon a police report and some medical records. Next, I will want to, it's in the briefs, but the Wasniewski case versus Schaid, Schaid, and Wasniewski is Kwasniewski. That's a Illinois Supreme Court case on a venue under similar circumstances, in the sense the accident happened in Wisconsin, was filed in Illinois, where the defendant resided, and there was a contribution defendant in Wisconsin. And the trial court made a couple important points there, which is the existence of a contribution defendant is wholly immaterial to the plaintiff's case, and that is a matter of interest only to the defendant and is a factor which is at this juncture wholly speculative. The court also in that case said, while the place of accident is a significant factor, it also carries less weight than the plaintiff's choice of forum in the county of defendant's residence, which is what we did here. So, under that scenario, once again, it's my contention that the judge, since we are here on an abuse of discretion standard, the judge needed to let us know what was the deference she was affording and how did she reach that conclusion. And then
Mr.
go.
Dar, do you agree that in an interstate forum nonconvenience, we're not comparing Whiteside County, Illinois versus Montgomery County, Missouri? We're comparing Illinois against Missouri.
Yes, but when you, I agree 100%. But when you engage in that analysis, you have to take into account that the only place you can file this lawsuit in Missouri is in a remote area, at least remote for the witnesses or potential witnesses, which is Montgomery County. When you're
But if
doing
the case belongs in Missouri, that's Missouri's law. That's part and parcel if you decide the case should be in Missouri.
Well, I mean, we would. I think you'd still have to do a convenience analysis. It just because there it's interstate transfer across state lines, you still have to engage in a convenience analysis. And when you engage in that convenience analysis, you still have to come down to the conclusion that it is preferable and more convenient. Under the proceeding in Whiteside County, as the court said in the Wasniewski case, that it's even though the accident was in Wisconsin, that's given less deference because the defendant was sued where he lives. And then also, I just wanted to address the Jupiter case that the court brought up in my initial argument. The exact quote from the brief I don't find, or in my motion, that I mean I didn't quote in my motion, but anyway, every motion to transfer based on forum nonconvenience must be considered as unique on its facts and must be decided pursuant to an individualized case by case consideration of convenience and fairness. And then it goes on to say, and that was in paragraph 36 and paragraph 37 of the opinion. The court goes on to say, when deciding a forum convenience motion, the circuit court is to include all of the relevant private and public interest factors in their analysis. And in this case, the court considered none of them, other than there was a recital of that fact. But the courts have consistently said,
Well, excuse me, Mr. Darr, how do we know that the trial court didn't consider each and every private interest factor and each and every public interest factor?
Well, I don't know. I mean, I surmise she didn't because I was there, but once again, I believe the law is that she has to make that part of her order. And the reason that has to be part of her order is because it will be reviewed on an abuse of discretion standard. If it was reviewed on a de novo standard, it's not that important because the court looks at the entire record. In this case, you're looking at the substance of a court order to make a determination as to whether she abused her discretion. And if she doesn't give you the analysis, you can't just presume that she went through the analysis that she is required to do, which is the public and private interest factors. There has to be some guidepost established by her, and then the court can review that for an abuse of discretion based upon the existing case law that she had to consider.
All right, Mr. Dar, you are out of time. We appreciate counsel's arguments here this afternoon. The court will take the case under advisement and will issue a written decision. Thank you.